Welcome to Psyched for Psychology, a Nystrom & Associates podcast. Our hosts, Michelle Iverson and Brett Cushing, are both licensed marriage and family therapists at Nystrom & Associates. Each week, they talk about all things mental health and therapy, and you get a chance to dive into specific psychology topics that help promote personal development and wellness. And now, here are your hosts, Michelle and Brett.
Hello and welcome to another episode on Psyched for Psychology. My name is Brett Cushing. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist.
And I'm Michelle Iverson, also a licensed marriage and family therapist. Episodes are going to be released weekly Tuesday mornings, and you can email us podcast@nystromcounseling.com if you want us to see, because we do check very regularly, to see your comments, ideas, thoughts, feedback, even upcoming episode topics that you would love to hear us talk about.
So today we're going to be talking about a particular personality disorder, and personality disorders are things that people kind of throw around rather cavalier in our culture. And they'll say things like, well, that person is a narcissist. And we kind of have these armchair diagnoses of people. And I'm going to be talking with Michelle today about one in particular called borderline personality. And many of us might know somebody who has borderline personality, and I'm going to try to help us understand this with the help of Michelle, and we'll really explain what this is and develop greater sense of compassion for people that struggle with borderline. As we've said so often, one of our goals is to help us pivot from looking at people and saying, what's that person's problem? And begin asking, I wonder what's going on with them. I wonder, you know, how they're doing. So hopefully that will be the case with borderline personality, a complex and intense set of symptoms that really can plague people, but there's also hope for them. Mm-hmm. So let's jump in. Borderline personality. Why in the world did that name come up? It's really kind of odd. Borderline person, what does it mean? Right. I think we need to come up with a different term for this. Borderline personality was the term actually came up in 1938 by Adolf Stern. Mm-hmm. And back then, they in psychology, they were looking at kind of two aspects of psychology, urosis or neurosis. And you're like, they saw people as either kind of healthy or not healthy and psychotic or not or neurotic. And so what he did is he looked at some of his patients and said, you know, they're kind of on a borderline. They seem either like they could go psychotic or not. And they're just borderline. We can't really tell. So notice this is a diagnosis. And we've talked once before about labels and how
and stigma.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it can be helpful and it can be really hurtful.
Right. Because when we think about that term, one of the first things I do, I'm like, ooh, when we get on the topic of personality disorders, that word in and of itself, how stigmatizing. That idea of, well, this is your personality, so then therefore this is just who you are, is implied. And then therefore you're not going to be able to change. That already basically others that person and implies almost like a let's give up, right? Like, what are we going to even be able to do about this? And so that ends up being an experience a lot of people sometimes get from treatment providers, from friends, from family, and they start to internalize that message for themselves. And one of the first things I like to do is like, how do we break down that stigma?
Absolutely. And part of it is, I think, as we've talked on other podcasts and even our previous podcast about managing intense emotions, we need to get away from that dichotomous all or nothing categorization of people. And borderline personality, I think, falls prey to that.
Yeah.
People who have borderline, like you said, other people might look at them and think, oh, well, there's no hope for them. Even therapists, I know, can look at that. And I know back in the 90s when I was starting in my training, I kept hearing like, well, personality disorder, forget it. Mm-hmm. You know, there is no hope, like you said. And notice that absolute definition. There is no hope. Mm-hmm. And so I think people who get diagnosed with borderline personality, they feel there's no hope. And I'm really eager to share about borderline personality, because I do think as I share, this will give us a much greater sense of understanding, much greater sense of compassion. And I think it's that lack of understanding about borderline personality that has led people to have no compassion. Mm-hmm. And notice how we do that. When we don't understand things, we just become very intolerant. So I want us to develop this understanding of borderline personality and subsequently have greater sense of compassion.
Absolutely.
I don't have this for us to share today. I'm still looking at it, but there's some writings too about what you were saying that they're, I think, alluding to, at least, Michelle, that there are some real positive aspects mm-hmm. to yes. having borderline personality disorder. And some people listening might think, what? You know, mm-hmm. it is true. And unfortunately, I don't have time to share it today, but maybe in a future podcast. Okay. So when you think of BPD, mm-hmm. borderline personality disorder, what things have you heard other people kind of say, like one word sort of characterizations of that?
Oh, I mean, we could just go straight off the bat with our most stigmatized words in mental health field in general. Crazy, psycho. I've heard some people describe it as just like mood swings, which what does that really mean, mood swings, right? We have to dig into that a little bit more. Or I hear a lot of black and white language. They love me, they hate me.
Mm. Mm-hmm. How about people who have borderline personality disorder or people that know somebody?
I've heard from both.
Right. Yeah.
I just want to make that distinction. For that person that's experiencing it, they can feel that in my relationships, I love them or I hate them. Or if you are the person who cares about somebody with that, they experience that sometimes as well.
And it, you know, before I forget, do you know the most common book people think of for people who live with somebody who has borderline personality? Really kind of
is it the Stop Walking on Eggshells?
Stop Walking on Eggshells. Great book if you know somebody who has borderline personality disorder to help mm-hmm. understand, again, create understanding, develop compassion. Mm-hmm. So here's words that I think of when I think of borderline personality and from working with people who have borderline personality. One is instability. Mm-hmm. And there, people who have borderline personality have a great sense of instability regarding their self-image, instability about their emotions, and instability in their relationships. Now, before we get judgmental about that, think about that. Have you ever experienced instability in your life?
Oh, absolutely. I think everybody has.
Yeah. And how fun is that? I battle vertigo problems. So I get off balance. My right and left ear get sort of wonky. You know, they don't communicate real well sometimes. So I'm unstable and it really throws me off. And think about that. What it's like to have instability with your self-image, with your emotions, with your relationships. But also there's impulsivity that can characterize us as well. And there's impulsivity in a wide range of emotions. Mm-hmm. And I like this word. I don't like it for people who have it. I just like it because I think it characterizes them. Agony. Mm-hmm. Agony for themselves and for those close to them. Mm-hmm. I've heard many people with, I'm going to say BPD, borderline mm-hmm. personality disorder, say, I'm tired of hurting other people. Mm-hmm. And I'm tired of hurting myself. And that's that sense of agony they tend to go through. I don't want to hurt anybody anymore.
And what I think of too, like when we get away from those stigmatizing words and those stigmatizing language, and for clients who've internalized that, unfortunately, a big part of what I like to describe too, when I say how I describe this to you, I mean, we're going to go through the, you know, the diagnostic criteria, but I'm going to describe it to you as a collection of symptoms. Mm. And if those symptoms go away just with treatment, just like we would with depression or anxiety, that diagnosis goes away. To even have that hope, that feeling that just because this is called a personality disorder does not mean that I am stuck having to live with this or feel this way forever.
Right. Thanks, Michelle, for really mentioning that at the beginning here. Yeah. We want to start and end and have a lot of hope in this and normalizing this too. When we think of borderline personality disorder, I think people can relate better when they think of real life or even fictional kind of characters. Mm-hmm. And so some people, and I'm not trying to diagnose people, but some people have even suggested maybe Marilyn Monroe had borderline personality disorder. Pete Davidson, I believe
he's been vocal about that. He has that, and he's been thankfully very, very vocal about treatment and how treatment therapy has been very helpful for him as well, too.
Yes.
And we're going to, you know, pour one out for poor Pete, who I think got dumped by Kim Kardashian recently. So hopefully he's doing okay.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. Boy. Yeah. That's been big in the news. So hopefully he's doing okay right now.
I'm so out of touch.
He'll be fine. he's a famous celebrity. He'll be okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, another person that's famous is Brandon Marshall. I don't know if you know him. He plays for the Chicago Bears. A lot of respect for him. Great player too. Hard for me to admit as a Green Bay Packer fan, but I want to give some other examples of people who maybe have borderline personality disorder that we can all relate to a little bit better. And this is actually people who have borderline personality disorder and what they've said about themselves. Okay, so one person talked about the Hulk. We think of Marvel and all the movies, and the Hulk is one character that someone with borderline talked about. And he said about himself and the Hulk, he struggles with his identity and emotions. His emotions are often intense and unpredictable. Some people don't understand him. Others love him and fear him. He feels he's a danger to those who love him, and he regrets a lot of things. He spends a lot of time in isolation to protect the ones he loves. That's my life, and I often refer to myself as the Hulk. Can you think of another one?
Yeah. How about Anakin Skywalker?
Yes. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Have you heard anything about Anakin Skywalker that you want to share? Like maybe from a borderline personality person?
Okay. Not from like a movie's how do I feel about acting perspective. So character perspective. He is, especially in the beginning of the prequels, like he knows he's good. In some aspects, he's exceptional. But he gets debilitated by paranoia that he's being held back. He's being denied his rightful place. Really, really kind of common thoughts that a lot of clients might experience. Mm-hmm. And feeling as though a darkness is consuming him.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's such a great character that typifies that. Mm-hmm. I know somebody also said about him, although often painted as the villain, even as a kid, I've always strongly related to Anakin Skywalker from Star Wars, who becomes Darth Vader. While it's important to acknowledge this doesn't mean people with BPD are evil, his general character before he becomes Darth Vader has been described by professionals as borderline personality disorder. The preoccupations he had with the sense of abandonment and loss and intense passion, sensitivity, anger, and impulsiveness, along with what you said, paranoia, about betrayal. The frequent shifts between what he thinks and feels and feelings of being lost, empty, unsure of one's identity, those are all very true for people who have borderline personality disorder.
Okay, the next one's really surprising because I never would have thought of this one.
Elsa. I've never seen the movie.
From Frozen.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Do you want to read this one?
Yeah. So this is a really good one from somebody who's describing their experience as being like the character Elsa. And she said, you know, I've really connected with Elsa from Frozen simply because she's told all her life by her parents to conceal, don't feel, don't let it show, which is really very relatable for her, but I think for, again, many of our clients, when we start to think about, what kind of patterns in people's life histories that might kind of cause this to become a common disorder later in life, a lot of people have this experience when they're growing up. People telling me, don't show your emotions, control yourself. And then those people isolating themselves, just like Elsa did, because of her powers, the lack of control she felt she had over them, reminds this person she would isolate because of her BPD and the lack of control she had over her emotions. So she describes it, I've always had a soft spot for Elsa because I see so much of myself through her. Another person thinks too, like Elsa from Frozen, again, because of the isolating. And for this person's experience, who they also have BPD, they were like, I isolate myself to keep myself from hurting other people and then feeling like I can't control what happens when I get mad.
Notice the ongoing struggle. Yeah. People with BPD can inflict harm on mm-hmm. others, not intentionally.
No.
And yet they're living with the consequences of that. And there's so much struggle mm-hmm. to gain control. And we want to offer hope. And so I want to offer hope by means of our next example, Marcia Linehan. Marcia was the founder of Dialectical Behavioral Therapy. Mm-hmm. And she was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder. And she's quite a heroic, courageous person. And as I understand how the story goes, she found herself, what she said, in hell, again, at a hospital. Mm-hmm. And just from all the effects of borderline personality disorder upon her life, and prayed a prayer like, God, you know, if you can ever help me get out of this, I promise I'll take everything I've learned to help other people. And that's what she's done. She's a psychologist and she's developed, it's called DBT, Dialectical Behavioral Therapy. I do that professionally. And it is, if it's not the most effective, it is one of the most effective means of treating borderline personality disorder. And there is a lot of hope for mm-hmm. people. But let's understand this a little bit better. So when we're thinking about a diagnosis, how do we get at that? What are we talking about? Well, BPD is a pervasive pattern of instability and in interpersonal relationships, as I said, with self-esteem and emotion. And it's marked by, as I said, impulsivity. Beginning in early adulthood is typically when we see that. And it's present in a variety of contexts. Mm-hmm. And it's indicated by five or more of, we're going to give kind mm-hmm. of like nine different symptoms. So do you want to start with the first one?
Absolutely. The first one we're looking at is a fear of abandonment. So if you have BPD, one large part, often a driving factor behind some of the other things we're going to talk about, is being terrified of being abandoned or being left alone. Even something as kind of innocuous as, you know, the person you love coming home late from work or just going away for the weekend can trigger this very intense, scary fear. It can prompt frantic efforts trying to keep that other person close. But it might start resulting in unhelpful behaviors. You might be kind of begging, clinging to that person, maybe starting fights, maybe tracking their movements, or physically stopping and blocking that person from leaving. And so that behavior tends to then do the exact opposite of what you're wanting, driving that person away, which of course is going to reinforce that feeling of being abandoned.
Right. And this feeling that you just never get out of this. Mm-hmm. It's this unending cycle. And it's noteworthy, about 60% of the people who have BPD have this symptom of fear of abandonment. The next one is unstable relationships. And people with BPD tend to have relationships that are intense and short-lived. So you might fall in love quickly, believing that each new person is the one who will make mm-hmm. you feel whole, only to be quickly disappointed. Relationships can seem either perfect or horrible. Now notice that we talk a lot about dichotomous thinking, either or, all or nothing. And that's very indicative here. And there's no middle ground. So lovers, friends, family members, they feel like, may feel like they have emotional whiplash as a result of your rapid swings from idealizing them to then suddenly, unpredictably devaluing them and having anger and hate. About 79% of the people who have BPD have this symptom.
About 61% have this, an unclear or a shifting self-image. So your sense of self is unstable. Sometimes you might feel really, really good. Sometimes even amazing about yourself. But then other times you go to the extreme, you hate yourself, might even really truly just view yourself as being evil. You probably don't have a really clear idea of like who you are, what you want in life and who you want to be. So you might end up frequently changing things in your life, changing jobs, friends, who you're dating, even like your religion, your own values, your goals. All of these things might change and sometimes very rapidly.
Absolutely. And another one, about 81% of the people with BPD experience impulsivity and self-destructive behavior. So a person has BPD, they are likely to engage in harmful sensation-seeking behaviors, especially when they are upset. We've talked before, when our emotions get real high, like an 8, 9, 10 out of 10, that frontal lobe of the brain tends to shut down. That's where we do our reasonable thinking. and it's just pure emotion. And when we have that, we are really at risk of doing things very impulsively. So this could relate to financial impulsivity, binge eating, driving recklessly, sexual encounters, shoplifting, and they tend to overdo it with substances, drugs, or alcohol. So these risky behaviors may help the person feel actually better in the moment, but they actually end up hurting them, obviously, and those around them.
A lot of people experience self-harm and suicidal behavior as well, too. Suicidal behavior, that could really include a lot of different things. It could include just thinking about suicide, or it could escalate into making gestures, threats, commenting about it, commenting on, you know, if this doesn't happen this way, I might do this. Or it could mean actually carrying out on an attempt. Self-harm, really what we're talking about with self-harm would be any attempts to hurt yourself without that suicidal intent. So self-harm could be cutting, could be burning. And sometimes people it will be very visible on different parts of a person's body, and sometimes it's hidden.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, the one that's most characteristic of people with BPD, about 95% have extreme emotional swings. So the unstable emotions and moods are very common with people who have BPD. One moment they're feeling happy and the next very despondent. Little things that other people brush off can send someone with BPD into an emotional tailspin. And these mood swings, they're very intense, but they tend to pass quickly as well. Unlike emotional swings, like somebody who has bipolar, so people get really confused about that. That's a different kind of mood swing that happens in seasons. Whereas people with borderline, it can be sort of, wow, you get this whiplash, like, hey, you're great. And then all of a sudden you're not. And so you can tell just that instability that people have.
And chronic feelings of just feeling empty. We heard about that from some of the examples that we see in the media, that idea of feeling empty, like there's a hole or a void inside of me. In a real extreme manner, you might even feel like you're just nothing or nobody. That's a very uncomfortable feeling, of course. And so many people will try to fill that void. And what do we fill the void with? It could be things like drugs, food, sex, but nothing ends up being satisfying for that person. And that void remains.
And you can tell, like, the other symptom is explosive anger. You know, when you have this much instability and emotional swings and regret, that there's going to be a lot of anger too. And people with BPD, they struggle with intense anger and having a very short temper. So someone who has this may also have trouble controlling themselves. Once the fuse is lit, then yelling, throwing things, or becoming completely consumed by rage can happen. So it's important to know that this anger isn't always directed outwards. Oftentimes what's so hard for me in working with people with BPD is they have so much regret and shame that that anger is turned inward.
Oh, it is so hard to try and help that to change. And the last one we're going to talk about is feeling suspicious or even out of touch with reality. We often work with our clients on paranoia, suspicious thoughts about what other people's motives are, which kind of makes sense when we think about that fear of abandonment. When they're under stress, you might even start to lose touch with reality, something called dissociation. You might feel foggy, spaced out, or almost like you are living or even floating outside of your own body.
So people who have been diagnosed BPD have, we just went over about 9 different symptoms here, and they have at least 5 of those. And that would qualify for that diagnosis. Let's talk a little bit about diagnosis when it happens. I just want to share a little bit of children. It's been, you know, typically you don't diagnose people as a child with this. And
because how many teenagers can we think of?
Oh my goodness. Yeah,
I think just I had from,
BPD when I was a teenager.
Me too.
And so it's hard to tell. And so typically people aren't diagnosed with this until very late teens, 18, 19. Sometimes you can sort of see this with people as time is emerging. And some of the things I've read recently about this, Psychology Today put out an article not too long ago about this, and they were saying that, no, actually it was a podcast, and they were saying that The reason is because we've seen personality really develop over time. And mm-hmm. so we didn't want to come up with this diagnosis until later. But we're starting to learn that personality actually develops even right at the time, you know, someone's born. Mm-hmm. We can see their, and we do that. We do it with little babies. They're going to be a fighter, right, or something. And so that's starting to change. And what they also are learning is that people who are teens, you can sort of see these emerging symptoms and patterns. And you can look and say, well, if this person has a lot of support and a lot of validation in their home, mm-hmm. it might be something that sort of extinguishes mm-hmm. over time. And for people that don't have that, it's likely to kind of emerge into full-blown BPD. So, but let's talk a little bit more about it's just the general population. Where do we find this? And I'm just going to share a little bit of things here that I think are just interesting. Maybe they're not, but I'm going to take a shot. So where does this happen in our population? Well, one thing that's interesting is that it's about 1.6%. Let me back up. It's in the general population and in clinical settings. It's common. A large national representative non-clinical surveys of the United States and of our general population estimate that the point of prevalence of BPD is about 1.6%. And the lifetime prevalence is about 5.9%. So what's interesting, though, is that people diagnosed with it, women are diagnosed about three times more than men. Mm-hmm. And why is that? Any thoughts?
Oh, I have a lot of thoughts on that.
Whole other podcast here.
Oh, yeah. Well, when we kind of think about it, I mean, it's a very relational disorder, right? A disorder about relationships and a self-experience and that kind of really, well, we're a society that really encourages women to talk about those things. Mm-hmm. So then they might be more likely to come to somebody and talk through that versus a lot of men aren't encouraged to be able to talk about, their emotions, to talk about their experiences in relationships, to talk about fear of abandonments. Mm-hmm. That can be a lot harder to have a client who, and again, it's not necessarily them, but society putting pressure on them not being able to share about and talk about that experience. So that can get missed.
And another thing we are socialized with in our culture is it's okay for a woman to go see therapy.
That's
not
too.
Okay for a man, right?
Right.
The example I use with men that I think is helpful for them to embrace their emotions is, you know, when you look at a woman crying in public, you think, oh, I hope she's okay. What's mm-hmm. the matter? You see a man crying in public, you think, well, what's his problem? Mm-hmm. And so it's okay a lot of times for women to go to therapy. It's not okay for a man mm-hmm. because as men, we're socialized. We got to be strong. Mm-hmm. And ironically, what takes more courage? Mm-hmm. You know, I see women as much more courageous because they're going to go seek help. Mm-hmm. That takes a lot of courage. Yeah. And men, we're just socialized not to do this. So that's why there's that discrepancy. It doesn't necessarily mean that women are going to get this more than men. Mm-hmm. Now, this is interesting. I'm going to share a couple things with speaking about men and women because there are some differences. And when we think about some what we call comorbidities, some other things that are happening for people that have BPD, one of them would be PTSD. People who have borderline have PTSD often. And about 51% of women and about 31% of men. Notice the discrepancy, but I think that's also a reporting issue. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not okay for a man to say, yeah, I've had PTSD. You know, I've had this trauma happen to me. Eating disorders, women, 42%, men, 19% as it relates to people who have BPD. Identity disorders, women, 67%, men, 48%. Substance use disorders, women 58%, men 85%. And then there's also comorbidities with antisocial personality, women at only 10%, men about 30%. Narcissistic personality disorder. These seem kind of low to me. Women, some studies I found 5%, men about 22%. I've actually heard it's closer to 40% as well. And then schizotypal personality, women about 10%, men about 25%. So where does this come from? How does this happen? This is such an invasive part of someone's life mm-hmm. who has it. So where does this come from? And the answer is We don't know for sure.
Right.
What we've concluded is that it's genetic and it's social. So we call it a biosocial theory on where this comes from. So in other words, people might have a genetic disposition towards this, and they are going to have social factors that influence this as well. So naturally, we see some people are just more emotional. Mm-hmm. They're driven by feelings. Other people, they're driven by facts. And just look at most marriages. You see most marriages, opposites attract. And you have someone who's feeling oriented, someone who's facts oriented. So we see that, you know, people are just born with a more emotional state. And that's not bad. That's good, too. I mean, it can be good. It can be not so good at times. It's both. And the same with people that aren't as emotionally driven. And so we also have this social aspect to this as well. When we grow up and we've experienced trauma in our lives and we experience other kinds of invalidating, chronic invalidating environments, that can also influence us and can have an effect where people ultimately become diagnosed with BPD. Mm-hmm. Now, it doesn't mean if you've had trauma, you're going to have borderline personality disorder.
Yep.
It just means that we do see a correlation. We haven't been able to tease out the causative nature of that, or if there is one for sure. So it is nice to know that people who experience this oftentimes do have some trauma in their background. And again, that can really help with that compassion and understanding.
Right. And the interesting thing too about trauma, like we might make assumptions on what kind of trauma are we talking about, but sometimes early childhood traumas can even be things that on its face should be positive, like a child being adopted.
Right.
We would think, well, that's a wonderful thing. Like that shouldn't be trauma. Mm. But when we think about it from attachment and having just any form of disruption in that early attachment and bonding process, the act of adoption can sometimes be a potential risk factor when we think about trauma.
Absolutely. And when we look at these symptoms and we look at where all of this comes from in people's lives, let's offer some closing help and hope for people. So treatment options. The one that I referred to that I of course, I'm biased because I
do. You're very biased.
Yeah, and I think Nystrom, you know, we are really accredited at the highest accreditation level to do this.
Yes. So
I'm very proud of that.
We're biased for a very good reason.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, well said. So DBT, or Dialectical Behavior Therapy, has 4 modules within it. And so I'll talk about the first one, and if you want to talk about the second one. The first one is mindfulness. You hear a lot about mindfulness, and it might seem like it's the flavor of the month in our field, but it really, there's so much research that shows the importance of mindfulness on our mental health. And why it's important is because about 40% of our time is not spent in the present moment. Now, during this podcast, I know everybody listening has been 100% devoted to every word you and I are saying, but in reality, it's probably about half of the time you're really here and then you're checked out. And that's called normal, okay? Mm-hmm. So mindfulness, though, is being able to be in the present moment. And the more we can do that, the more we're able to have a greater sense of peace and calm in our lives, because we're activating another part of our brain that really helps us have greater sense of not only serenity, but being able to recover from emotional adversity. So when we practice mindfulness, we have a greater recovery period. And the other reason mindfulness is important is, notice, we do time travel. We kind of go into the land of the woulda, coulda, shouldas, into the future. And we do time travel into the past, of the woulda, coulda, shouldas of the past, or the what ifs of the future. And so when we do that time travel, I'm no longer in the present, and I have no control over the past. I have no control over the future. All I have control over is right now and how I'm going to respond. So mindfulness is very empowering for us to live our lives. Mindfulness as a way of life also, it's not only empowering, it enables us to have greater sense of peace.
A big part of DBT and what they teach too is interpersonal effectiveness. So what does that mean? I like to think of back to our abandonment example. The example of, you know, your loved one is coming home late from work or leaving for the weekend, but then I respond in these really, really unhelpful behaviors. And what interpersonal effectiveness is doing is giving you better strategies for asking for what you need, for saying no, for coping with conflict with the people that you care about the most. So we're teaching you how to handle situations where you want something changed or you need to maybe potentially resist change, but doing it in a helpful way where you're going to actually have your goals and your needs met and in a way that is not going to damage your relationships.
Right. And the next two modules in DBT deal with our emotions. Mm-hmm. And the first one I'll talk about is distress tolerance. We were just talking about that in the previous podcast. What did we entitle that one? I like that name you came up with. Is it time to revoke your emotions driver's license? That was,
yes.
Because sometimes our emotions are so intense. And how do we manage intense emotions? We can see people who have BPD, they experience that. And so the emotions and the intensity of the emotion is sort of in the driver's seat of our life. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of this backseat driver feeling out of control. Distress tolerance skills help people with those really intense emotions. And it helps to give skills that provide two things. One is to survive the immediate crisis so that mm-hmm. I don't give in to doing some sort of impulsive behavior that I'm going to regret later, and to accept reality. It's so hard because it seems like if I'm going to accept reality, then I'm approving of what's happened to me or what's going on around me. And that's hard for all of us, but that's distress tolerance to deal with those really intense emotions.
And then finally, the last piece that DBT is going to talk about is emotion regulation. This actually really relates to, again, our previous podcast in which we talk about how do we manage intense emotions. So that's the skill. That's the focus. In that podcast episode, Brett talks about the window of tolerance and what it's like for our clients to be outside of that window. And how do we move back into a space in which we can manage and tolerate these really, really intense and sometimes very scary feelings that we are having. And so that's what this is about. And a lot of things you learn from this in DBT, you're learning about how do I label, identify my emotions, figure out if there's something getting in my way of trying to change my emotion in the moment, increase my own experience of having positive emotions, increasing my mindfulness to my current emotions, using opposite action skills, which I love all the time, doing the opposite of what that intense emotion is trying to have me do, which is usually very unhelpful. Applying those distress tolerance techniques and using that to be able to help stay within my window where I'm going to feel much better than if I were to be outside of it.
Yes. And there is a last module here. I think I said four. I meant five. There's the last module, which is
which
really,
one did I miss?
I'm gonna touch on it right here. And it's finding a middle path option and thinking differently about the world and thinking about about oneself and other people differently. And that is the word for that is dialectical. It's mm-hmm. embedded in the name DBT or dialectical behavior therapy. And we're talking about having a balanced way of thinking about oneself and the world. So it's not all or nothing. Mm-hmm. That's dichotomous thinking. Dichotomous thinking, the all or nothing mentality only further escalates our emotion and it inhibits our ability to manage our emotions. So many people with BPD have that, or their emotions go up very quickly, very intensely, and there's an inability to manage that. One of the big reasons is this dichotomous way of thinking, and then we introduce a dialectical or balanced way of thinking. It's kind of like a teeter-totter. You can appreciate something's difficult and that there's something beneficial maybe embedded within an experience. And so it's looking at the world and it's looking at approaching conflicts, relational problems, people, even oneself, in that balanced mode. It's not that I'm all bad or this person is all bad or they're all good. Simultaneously, it's both. Mm-hmm. And so this is so important to them. But when we look at people with BPD mm-hmm. and we look at all of these skills, I have grown tremendously as a DBT therapist by using these skills. Mm-hmm. These are not just for people with borderline personality.
No.
This is for everybody. Mm-hmm. And there's been talk about, hey, when people go through this, they say, I wish I would have had this years ago. Mm-hmm. Can we get this into the school systems? Can we get this in college? Can we get this for couples? It's incredibly relevant. So people I've encouraged, they can research this. Mm-hmm. They can pursue these skills for themselves. And it can be beneficial for virtually everybody. Mm-hmm. I continue to grow as I do dialectical behavioral therapy. So we hope that that is the case. Yes,
absolutely.
We also hope that as you hear about BPD, you whether you have it or somebody else, that there's a sense of hope for you, and you can have greater understanding, greater compassion, that people with BPD, they're just like everybody else. And to be overly simplistic, maybe they just have greater intensity of the way they experience things at times. Mm-hmm. And they're suffering. They're in agony. And they need help. They need compassion. They need people to come alongside of them. So hopefully you can do that. And we are hopeful that you're going to come back and see us again.
Absolutely. Again, thank you so much for joining us today. And please make sure to like, share, and subscribe to our Psyched for Psychology podcast. We'll have new episodes being released every Tuesday morning. You can find us on any major podcast streaming platform, and you can follow us for new episodes.
Also, we want to invite you to please email us. Let us know your comments to podcast@nystromcounseling.com. That's podcast@nystromcounseling.com. And let us know any ideas for future topics that you would be psyched to hear us talk about. Again, you can also learn about Nystrom and Associates and all of our available mental health services by going to nystromcounseling.com. That's nystromcounseling.com. Thank you for joining us. We're psyched to talk to you again real soon.
Thank you as always for listening, and please be sure to leave us a review. While this podcast can't be a replacement for therapy, we hope you enjoyed our discussion today and join us again next time. Nystrom and Associates is always available to those who are struggling. If you find yourself in need of support and help, please check us out at nystromcounseling.com.